Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Tonight at 8, I'll be hosting a pre-debate special, if there is a debate, called Public Radio's Election Reset. We will be live here on WNYC and around the country on public radio stations and XM satellite radio. That's 8 o'clock tonight, just before the alleged Obama-McCain debate, which we will carry live as well. Within the hour, in case you missed it when we carried it live, President Bush came out of the White House and said this about the current stalemate.
There are disagreements over aspects of the rescue plan, but there is no disagreement that something substantial must be done. The legislative process is sometimes not very pretty, but we are going to get a package passed. We will rise to the occasion, Republicans and Democrats, will come together and pass a substantial rescue plan. Thank you very much.
All right. The president sounding optimistic and also resolute that something still needs to be done. So there may or may not be an Obama-McCain debate tonight, and it may or may not still be on foreign policy. In any case, Zbigniew Brzezinski is watching with interest. The former national security advisor to President Carter has a new book with Brent Scowcroft, the former national security advisor to the first President Bush. It's called America and the World, Conversations on the Future of American Foreign Policy, published by the New America Foundation. Mr. Brzezinski, thanks for coming back on WNYC. Good morning.
Nice to be with you again. Good morning.
Given the events of the moment, I have to ask you, does the crisis in the economy have foreign policy implications?
Obviously it does. The fact that the United States seems to be paralyzed and also on the brink of a severe crisis undermines American influence in the world and damages the notion that America is the bulwark of international economic and financial stability. So clearly, this is a very damaging and threatening development.
Would one kind of deal or another, in your opinion, reinforce the idea of America as the bulwark of financial stability, or has that horse left the barn?
No, I don't think that horse has left the barn. I think that's doable. I think it will take a lot of effort and ingenuity and some luck. I am still an optimist that, in the sense that I think we'll come out of this crisis after some pain, and that America will still be the financially and economically preeminent country in the world for some time to come. But the damage, nonetheless, is substantial, and the next president, as a consequence, will face a much more difficult international as well as domestic challenge. He will really be taxed, and he will be really under great stress to provide effective leadership.
Does the crisis and the apparent solution, which is some kind of taxpayer equity in banks and insurance companies, at least for a while, undermine the message that the United States generally puts out to developing countries, that you have to develop your economy in a hypermarket capitalist way? This is the way the World Bank and the IMF have been trending in recent years under U.S. influence. The shock therapy model that they used in Poland and elsewhere after the end of the Cold War, does it undermine the message that the U.S. has been trying to put out about how developing countries become capitalist and successful?
I think it discredits some notions propagated in recent years, which were excessively doctrinal, excessively ideological, and which, in fact, did not fully take into account the complexity of the American system, in which, while free enterprise predominates, there is already, and for quite a few decades, a very substantial role for government regulation and intervention. And even right now, in the midst of this crisis, the reaction of the administration testifies to the point that I'm making, namely that while we have a free enterprise system, there are times when government intervention is essential to the maintenance of stability.
Bernard-Henri Lévy, the French commentator and philosopher, has some questions that he would like to hear asked at the foreign policy debate tonight if it takes place between Obama and McCain. And let me put one of his questions to you. He wrote, how will this financial tsunami change your Iraq policy and its timetable? Do you think there's any relationship there or that there should be?
You know, I think as far as Iraq is concerned, what Senator Obama has been advocating for more than half a year has almost become the official position now of the Bush administration and of the Maliki government in Iraq. People have been howling against the idea of a scheduled withdrawal, are now in effect accepting the idea, and there are some differences as to when that should occur. Maliki is talking about 2 years from now or so. The administration, in effect, is accepting that. But the principle of termination of American presence in Iraq is now, in effect, national policy. And the only person that's at odds with that is Mr. McCain,
who seems to
feel that we should conduct this operation until some undefined notion of victory becomes apparent.
Although sometimes I think it's more a matter of rhetoric and emphasis than actual policy, because McCain says we have to stay in until we achieve victory. Obama says we have to get out, but don't worry, I won't pull us out if there's a need to stay in. So does it come down to how they each define need, and do they really see the conditions under which they can safely pull out as so different?
Well, I think that, first of all, Obama is talking about disengaging because the conditions are becoming ripe for it and because the Iraqis are asking for it as well. And the longer we stay, the more we'll be part of the problem and less part of the solution. I think the difference between the Obama position, which de facto now the president has endorsed, and the McCain position is that in the latter case, we're supposed to stay there until some undefined victory has taken place. We leave, and Iraq thereafter is a stable, secular democracy. Now, how realistic that is, just anyone who knows anything about Iraq knows that this is a totally unrealistic objective.
Former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, my guest on WNYC. His new book with former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft. Brzezinski served under Carter. Brent Scowcroft served under the first Bush. The book is called America and the World, Conversations on the Future of American Foreign Policy. On another topic, looks like the United States and Pakistan were shooting at each other yesterday. What do you make of the incident?
I think it's beginning to develop the way that I have been fearing and warning against. Namely, we cannot get more and more deeply involved in the chaotic, historically prolonged chaos that now dominates life in Afghanistan and is spreading to Pakistan. And if we engage in a deepening militarization of our presence there, and if we begin to undertake military operations across the board into Pakistan, we'll translate our involvement in Afghanistan into a prolonged and deepening involvement in Pakistan itself. And if that happens, we're going to be bogged down in that part of the world, perhaps for 2 decades. Don't forget, it's already 7 years since we've been in Iraq. Imagine what will happen if we get involved also in Pakistan, a country of 170 million people.
But I gather you're a Barack Obama supporter. Wasn't it Barack Obama who said in an early debate that the United States should unilaterally go into Pakistan, even without the Pakistani government's permission, if there are viable al-Qaeda targets there that the U.S. feels it needs to get for our own national security?
Well, being a supporter doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything he says, and that's why I like to distinct myself as a supporter and not as a member of, you know, his foreign policy team, which then has to repeat what he says. On that instance, I think he's basically right, but it depends how you interpret what he said. In my view is, if we ever were to get some information that, for example, Osama is located in some place and we don't see any evidence that the Pakistanis are going after him, we would be justified in striking, given what he has done to the United States, or some effort was being made by him to repeat his previous attack. But simply going into Pakistan, chasing the Mujahideen, the Taliban, guarantees that we're going to get drawn into a deepening conflict with Pakistan itself. That doesn't solve any problem for us at all. Note that within the last 2 days, there's now been an exchange of fire between U.S. military and the Pakistani army. Do we really want to get involved in that kind of a shooting conflict?
Here is a related question, I think, from a caller. Brian in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Zbigniew Brzezinski. Hello.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Brian. Two-part question from Mr. Brzezinski. A, does he think there was any blowback from our funding the Mujahideen in the 70s against the Russians? And B, what was he doing at the Bilderberg Group, and why is there no press allowed inside?
Well, on the second question, I'm not a member of the Bilderberg Group, so you better go to someone that is. On the first question, the fact is that our help to the Afghans in resisting the Soviets made it possible for us to overthrow the Taliban in Afghanistan with only 300 U.S. military personnel. We didn't have to have more because the Afghans were on our side. They were grateful for what we did in helping them against the Soviets. The problem has developed, however, over the last 7 years, namely that we're staying, we're increasing our military presence, we're militarizing our efforts in Afghanistan. We're now spreading these efforts into Pakistan, and this is what I'm warning against.
Before you go, one other topic, and that's China. You write in the book, or there's a transcription of your conversation in the book, about how we must view China not as a rival primarily, but as a partner primarily in the age of globalization. But I wonder if you think, now that the Olympics are over, if they served any purpose in opening up China or bringing more democracy to China, as many people hope they would, as, in fact, I think the Olympic Committee hoped they would when they granted China the Games and all the attention that came with it.
Well, I question the premise that the Olympic Committee was actually doing what it did in order to promote democracy in China. I think the Olympic Committee is preoccupied with having effective games in countries that can well organize them and finance them. But as far as their impact on China is concerned, I think very indirectly, it helps to promote diversity, openness to the world, greater interaction between Chinese society and the rest of the world. And all of that cumulatively does help democracy, though slowly and indirectly. Today, China is an infinitely more open country than it was even 10 years ago, not to mention 20 or 30, incomparably more open than the Soviet Union was. I mean, millions of Chinese now travel abroad. Scores of millions, well over 100 million, maybe 200 million Chinese have access to the internet. Millions of foreigners visit China. Thousands and thousands of Chinese study abroad and then go home and to work to develop their country. There is investment by the Chinese in the world and investment by us in China. All of that means that China's transformation, development, is gradually acquiring a less ominous, a somewhat less totalitarian, certainly a much less ideological veneer. And that's all to the good.
Do you see, and I'll note that the internet access that you mentioned is, of course, imperfect at best, but do you see McCain and Obama as being different on China?
Well, first of all, the internet access is imperfect, but it still is access and cannot be entirely controlled. They can try to limit it, but you can't shut it off anymore. Are there fundamental differences between Obama and McCain on China? I know that Obama would, by and large, continue the policy of drawing China into the international system and trying to create conditions in which it becomes in China's own interest to adapt to international standards and to emphasize interaction, mutual trade, economic interdependence, and so forth. I would suspect that, by and large, McCain would probably point in the same direction, but with a sharper edge on some of the controversial issues, whether it's Taiwan or Tibet or democracy in China. And the question, of course, arises how one strikes a balance between that and the other objectives I have described. And I suspect that McCain being more impulsive, there is a greater risk of some unintended collision between us and the Chinese. Nothing of a military kind, I hasten to add, but a kind of sudden surfacing of hostility.
Zbigniew Brzezinski, his new book with Brent Scowcroft, America and the World, Conversations on the Future of American Foreign Policy. I appreciate this interesting conversation.
It was nice to talk to you again.